This is the All Day Rock Off Podcast, episode number 18. Welcome to the All Day Rock Off Podcast, episode number 18. This is your host, Brian, and I wanted to thank you so much for tuning in. We truly hope you enjoy this episode. And don't forget to check out our previous episodes as well. The All Day Rock Off podcast includes interviews, answers questions, and provides updates on the rocking community. In this episode, I interview Alex Stabdell, who was the only finisher of GORUCK Selection Class 019. Before we get into the interview, I wanted to take a minute to thank everyone who has left a review on the Apple Podcast Network. This first one is a 5-star review from Maddie PG, who says, "Thanks for this podcast. It's awesome. It's great to get more insight on an already great group of people and interests. Long story short, drug issues, took almost a decade of his life, got clean, remarried an alcoholic, got fat, like 387 pounds fat on a 5'7" frame fat, then found GORUCK. He promised himself if he lost 100 pounds, he would do a light. He got divorced, lost 100 thanks to a keto diet, but didn't train, didn't work out, no cardio, and was grossly unprepared for his light. He still signs up for the light, remarries, has a beautiful daughter, did his first light, which was class 235, and Cadre Bill plus the class got him through it. He got patched and got hooked on GORUCK. He started weight training, added cardio, finished Constellation Class 019, and has plans to hit many more events. This is where he found a new zest for life and the pursuit of happiness, and he can't wait to get smoked at his next event." Man, I don't even know where to start with this one. I too got hooked on GORUCK after my first event in 2011, and I also have friends who say they will sign up for an event once they lose a certain number of pounds. You might be listening to this and have that goal set for yourself. Just sign up. Maddie PG did it at 287, and it had such an impact on him that he wrote that review. You can do it too. Second review is also a 5-star one from Rucking Chick. "Being familiar with rucking, I find this podcast great and even inspiring at times to listen to on my commute to work. Between the podcast and having completed a few charity challenges, it definitely pushed me over the edge to sign up for my first GORUCK Light, which was 9/11 in DC this past September. Now I'm hooked, and I can't wait to do my first tough event. The information in the interviews is great, and I always take something away from it. Thanks for all you do, the wonderful podcast, and in continuing to inspire others. First off, thank you so much for signing up for Charity Challenges events. I truly appreciate that, and I'm so glad that you enjoy them. Secondly, I'm glad that you had a great time at that light event, and I'm super excited that you're going to tackle a tough in the future. Hopefully you keep enjoying the podcast, and thank you so much for leaving that review and those amazing words. I truly appreciate it. Quick announcement, charitychallenges.org. Flutterkick Challenge is still open for signups. 100% of proceeds to charity. Check it out. Long intro, but here we are. I'm very excited about this interview with Alex and am truly grateful that he took so much time out of his life to chat with me. Alex is a serious endurance athlete and is the only finisher of GORUCK Selection Class 019. Without any further introduction, here is the interview with this amazing guy. Thanks so much again, Alex, for just taking the time to talk with me. I truly appreciate this, and I'm super excited about it.
No, I'm stoked, so it's great.
So let's start out with your involvement in the GORUCK community. How did you first stumble upon GORUCK?
Yeah, so I have to give credit specifically for signing up my first GORUCK event to my buddy, Eric. You know, I knew him through the obstacle course racing community. He is actually funny. He was one of the first guys I met when I signed up for my very first Spartan race, which was a hurricane heat followed by a sprint. And I saw this dude camping out in the parking lot, like in a tent. And I was like, hey, that guy's got the right idea. I got to be friends with that guy. So we met from there. We kind of, you know, had a big group that all molded together. And, you know, we camped before a lot of obstacle course races, that sort of thing. Just all of a sudden at one point, he's like, hey, man, I noticed people are doing this thing called GoRuck, and explained a little bit about it. He said, I did one. It was super cool. You got to try it out. So, yeah, I signed up for my first challenge. He was there. A couple other friends were there. And I had a great time. It was with Cadre Jesse and Cadre Heath in New York City. And it was really cool. It was definitely different.
That's awesome. So back to the hurricane heat, what year was that?
That wasn't too long ago. That was 2014.
Okay.
I did one obstacle course race the year before that, which was a Rugged Maniac. And then I was like, yeah, this is cool. I need more of a challenge. I got to train more for this. And yeah, the next season was 2014, and that was it. Tuxedo. I did the hurricane heat and then I did the sprint.
Very cool. So when was that first GoRuck event?
See, that first GoRuck event, I guess it was probably, it wasn't the same season. So it must have been the season after that, which would have been 2015. And I think, if I remember correctly, I think it was like the end of March of 2015.
Very cool. So leading up to that GoRuck event, I mean, you've done a number of Spartan races, mud runs, the hurricane heat. At that point, had they switched it over to the kind of ruck-based individual event, or was it still a team-based event?
The hurricane heat?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so the hurricane heat back then, I mean, that was still... The hurricane heat now is a much more introductory event. You know, they smoke people in the 12-hour, but... The hurricane heat back then was like, you know, now it's a much more introductory event. They really they put us through the ringer. I mean, granted, I had a lot less experience with any sorts of endurance events or, you know, anything like that. And yeah, it was only 5 hours or so, but I remember that event. They definitely like they smoked us.
They brought it.
They didn't mess around back then. Yeah, that was a Tony Matesi event. So that was solid. It was,
oh wow,
it was, you know. That was still when almost everybody, you know, involved with Spartan, especially the endurance events, were death racers, you know, from like the old school crew. So
yep.
Yeah, he put us through the ringer for sure.
Yeah, I did my first hurricane heat back in 2011, I want to say, or 2012. And then I did another one a year after that. And I know they've changed a ton since then, but they're pretty interesting back then.
It's great because it, you know, it gives a scaled event for people to, you know, just like a lot of the companies, you know, there's a, hey, something more introductory, and then it gets more advanced as you go. So, I mean, it's great the way they do it now, but yeah, it is funny because, you know, we'll talk about sometimes they're like, man, you know, that they would smoke you back then for sure, regardless of the length.
Yep. So when you finished your first GoRuck event back in March-ish of 2015, were you hooked? And did you know you wanted to do another event afterwards, or did you need some time to process it all and recover a little?
No, I think I was definitely in the camp of like, that was really cool. I loved it. You know, definitely wanted to do more. You know, I was in Boy Scouts all growing up. I was outside a lot. I was used to backpacking. You know, I had done a lot of backpacking trips, heavy packs, you know, lots of miles in the woods. And, you know, it was funny because when I showed up to my first top, I was like, oh man, I know this stuff. You know what I mean? I've been doing this my whole life. And I had like my stuff all like neatly tied up in my ruck. I was like, oh, I'm going to put, it was still bricks then. I was like, I'm going to put my bricks really high and, you know, I'm going to cinch down my water bladder and do all this fancy stuff. And like, oh, I know all this. This is going to be great. You know? And I showed up like, oh, I got this. This is going to be good. You know, still with some hesitation about what was going to happen at the event, but like, all right, at least my gear is solid because I know this stuff. And of course, immediately right off the bat, Jesse's just like, you know, all right, dump out all your shit. And I'm just like, uh-oh, everything's tied up. I have a disaster going on here. So that was kind of like my very first dip in the water was Jesse with a flashlight in my face, like, dump all your shit out. And of course I can't because there's a million knots tying everything up, you know, so it was definitely funny. But as far as after we were done, loved it, thought it was totally cool. And my second event was, you know, I ended up signing up and buying a GoRuck bag for the Memorial Day heavy, which was, you know, at that point, like a month and a half away. So I was hooked, definitely.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, the team sense of it and everything, you know, the way, I mean, that's why I still love doing the team events, you know, meeting a group of people that you don't know, I think is even more fun many times than doing it with a group of people you do know, because, you know, you go from nobody knows each other to, hey, you know, we went through this thing together that was rough and we forged together and, you know, we get to know each other and have a good time. So I think that's always one of the coolest parts.
Yeah, it's always really fun, especially if you're doing it in a new city that you've never been to. You get to explore a town at times that, you know, you generally aren't out exploring, and you get to meet a ton of people who are, you know, also crazy enough to sign up for the same stuff you are. So it's a good company.
Yeah, absolutely. Going city to city is definitely one of my favorite parts and something I want to do, you know, even more of for sure. I mean, the second event, like I said, was Memorial Day heavy. And that was back when if you signed up for a heavy, you were automatically signed up for the tough and the light. So, you know, it was my second event. I had done okay on the tough, but I mean, I was not conditioned to ruck. And that heavy was Maddie and Logan. And then Kadri Jeff showed up as a surprise because he was in town. And they went on a solid rotation. That was a 27-hour heavy. And, you know, I still didn't have a Goruck bag at that point. I hadn't gotten it. It was with Bricks. So it was some crappy off-brand ruck. And 27 hours later, like, we finished that heavy. And I was like, I can't walk anymore. I had done all the prep. I had read all the things. But it didn't matter. Physically, I hadn't been training rucking for, you know, barely any time, a month or two at that point. And there was no way that the tough, which at that point was starting in 18 minutes, was going to happen. I was like, nope. And that, you know, I finished that heavy, but that HCL didn't happen. So I said, okay, before they change it, that was when they were going to go to HTL from an HCL. And silly thing, but I just said, I want to do it while it's still what it was, since that's what I tried. So I ended up signing up for the Vet Day HCLS the following fall in San Francisco, because that was the only one left. And that was awesome because I flew out to San Fran, met all the NorCal GRTs, awesome group, and, you know, got to know so many of those people just from doing that trip. And it's all because I failed at the first HDL. So yeah, you know, sometimes things work out like that. And it was super cool. That definitely gave me the bug of, oh, I got to go around the city and meet other crews.
That's awesome. Yeah. There's a huge group of GRT down in California. That NorCal group is awesome. So that's great. You got out there.
Yeah. They were really cool. Yeah. It was a huge, I mean, even the HDLS class, there were tons of drops and yet it was like a 30 person or 31 person HDLS class. So yeah, it was a big group, but they don't mess around up there.
No kidding. So March 2015 is your first tough. A couple months later is your heavy. A bit after that, you do the HCLS. When did you decide that you wanted to attempt Goruck selection?
So the first time with selection, I guess I remember I was at Wintergreen for the Spartan Super in Virginia. Our same group I was talking about gets like a big condo there. And it was that same weekend, and I watched Stoney in Bozeman, Montana. And I had, you know, I'd never really heard of selection. Once or twice, maybe I knew it was like, oh, this thing that's much harder than the other ones, but, you know, hadn't read anything on it or really seen anything at that point. And, you know, I remember such a big group between the endurance community and OCR and, you know, that whole community. So, you know, a lot of people, and then a lot of people know a lot of people. And it's like, you know, I remember like this person who I, you know, is a strong, oh yeah, I know this guy, he's an animal, and I know this guy, he's an animal. And it was like, you know, the huge group of us watching it was like, oh, there's a ton of horses in the race. And then it was practically like we went to bed, we got up the next day, and nobody's left. And that's what caught my attention originally, because I said, wow, this just, I have all these people who I respect in the community who are like, oh yeah, I know this dude, he's a beast. And they're literally all gone. And I followed through and I watched Tony finish and I said, man, that is awesome that it went down to one dude. And I guess a little after that is, you know, when I started researching it a little more and, you know, read some of the past AARs and looked at the low finish rate. And at that point, I had already finished the death race, which was a huge, you know, item to check off the list. So I said, okay, like, I read that original Outside Magazine review where they're like, are the, you know, the hardest events out there. And 1 and 2 were the death race and selection. So I was like, all right, if I'm going to go train for something hard, selection is the next thing. So I didn't know necessarily how long it would take me to get ready for that, because I still at that point hadn't been rucking for that long. So I guess probably from the time I saw Stoney do it, and then, you know, I kind of felt out my training and my events and did another HCL, and I said, okay, I think, at that point I started researching and reading everything that I could find on it. You know, even it's amazing in the past 2 years how much more is out there versus how hard you had to look for it before. But I read everything I could, and I guess probably, yeah, it was maybe 8 months before my first attempt in 2016 where I said, okay, like, I'm going all in on training. I didn't actually sign up till, I guess, a month and a half before it, because I didn't see the point in spending all that money if, you know, I could have got injured during training or another event or something, you know, because as you've heard Jason mention, a lot of people mention, like, you need to be motivated to train, you know, and then signing up is like the formality. If you think that signing up is going to motivate you to train and you don't already have that motivation, it's not going to happen. So I knew there was no rush to sign up. I waited till I knew I wasn't injured, and then I laid out the money for it. So yeah, about 8 months before was when I said, okay, like, I'm 100% in on this.
That's wild. And selection is not an event that sells out. I don't even know if it can sell out. So it makes complete sense to work it that way. So you had 8 months to train leading up to your first GORC selection attempt in 2016.
Yep. Yeah, that was selection 018 in Bellbrook, Ohio last year.
Yeah, that was quite the event. That was one of the first GORC selection events that there was some real live coverage going on there. So
yeah, I mean, if you look at past events, you know, 015, selection 015 in Jacksonville, I don't know, off the top of my head, maybe 4 years ago, whatever it was, that one had serious coverage. And then Stoney, they gave, you know, in Bozeman for 017, they gave some coverage, but most of the other ones before that were pretty black. And then, yeah, last year was the first year that they started to dabble in some of the more live updating.
So your first attempt obviously didn't end in success, or I guess completion. How did that impact the way you trained for round two?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, for the first attempt, I mean, I can definitely say I did all my homework. I, you know, even that small difference in time, I had to put together and find a lot of those AARs and reviews and any little clip or, you know, video tidbit I could find online. Like, I scoured and scoured and scoured to find it. I built just like a little notepad file with all the finishers and all the classes and where they were and stuff, because that wasn't even listed anywhere. There was no official list, you know, which still, I think some of the blogs may have, you know, in the last year or two, funny enough, have maybe put together some of that information. It's much easier to find, but even 2 years ago, it wasn't around. So I had read, like I said, every AR review or anything I could find. The training was solid. You know, I smoked myself. It was the same kind of dedication, 12, 13, 14 workouts a week, before work, after work, weekends, you know, long rucks, short rucks, really heavy rucks, running, weightlifting, the whole thing. You know, I did it. I was ready in Bellbrook. I think part of it, my experience in, you know, multi-day events or stage races or whatever you want to call it kind of worked against me. And of course the cadre, the cadre are good at what they do. And it just, any other event, as hard as it is, as gnarly as the stuff they might have you do is, when it comes down to it, you know, you, even during the death race and events like that, you know, you'll see people and they'll give you a thumbs up, or, you know, the ring, like, you talk to other people. Selection one of the things about it is, you know, you're just in your own head. You literally don't get to talk to anybody the whole event, you know, which that probably, you know, at least I know it probably messed with my head. I think that would mess a lot, you know, would mess with a lot of people's head, because it's just like, you're in your own head the whole time. You have to be. Yeah. I just, you know, that killed me when I dropped, and I looked at, you know, everybody looked at me, the cadre, and they switch out of cadre mode, and they're like, "Hey, man, you were doing great." But in the moment, you just feel like, "Oh, I'm doing terrible. This is embarrassing. I can't believe I'm doing so bad." All of a sudden, you know, you go from winning, and it's down to four of you, and all of a sudden, you're the worst out of the four. If you don't really have a good lock on what's happening, feels very discouraging. So, yeah, it certainly wasn't a good feeling afterwards. I mean, I literally never quit anything in my life that I had said, okay, I'm going to do this, you know, to train so hard, and then just, oops, you know, it's all gone fast. It was certainly a bummer. It was fuel for sure.
I'm sure. That's tough. And I've, you know, the other GORC selection finishers that I've had on the podcast have said that it's challenging, especially as you get further into the event, because, you know, you're so used to knocking out X number of push-ups or running a mile in a certain time. And then as you progress through the event, obviously your times and your numbers get worse and worse. And you start thinking like, what's going on? Am I falling apart? So.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I guess what happened, you know, the last year in Bellbrook, it was like I said, the PT test was okay. Yep. I mean, I had a plan. The whole plan was like, get through Thursday, and like, if you're there for sunrise on Friday in that small group, like, that's awesome. So, I mean, I crushed the PT test, welcome party, just like, I felt in my head, like, oh man, I smoked that. That was awesome. You know, we went through all the evolutions at night. I made it to sunrise, and in my head, I'm like, oh, this is great. Sun's going to rise, and that's always motivation. You know, funny enough, the sun's always the thing that gives you power. Mark just took off. He just like turned a switch on when the sun came up, like an animal, and just started crushing stuff. And that just happened to be when I was in a dip, and I got behind as the sun started to come up. And then, of course, you know, those evolutions, a couple hours long each, I was behind. And, you know, each time he's resting for 10, 15, 20 minutes in between evolutions. So of course, then he's winning more and more. And yeah, it just gets really discouraging. All of a sudden, you know, like, man, how I was crushing it all night. How am I doing so bad? You know, so then you're thinking to yourself, this is going bad. You have the cadre telling you this is going bad. Yeah, it's weird how you just end up in your own head, like, oh man, I can't believe I'm doing so bad. Even though to everybody else looking from the outside, they're like, oh, you know, those guys are all crushing. So definitely a great mental teaching moment.
Yeah. So GORC selection 18 is done. At what point did you decide that you were going for GORC selection 19?
I mean, I was sitting around the fire, the quitter's fire, as you want to call it, in the back of Jason's dad's house. And, you know, like I said, I walked back up there, Jason carried my ruck, and I think it was Garrett made me eggs. So I'm sitting there eating, and I'm just like, man, you're an idiot. You know, like, you're having that moment of just like, oh, I can't believe I just threw away all that training. So it was just a mix of like being pissed off and just, hey, I definitely, there's no way I'm waiting 2 years to do another one, or, you know, come back here because I'm comfortable with it or anything like that. It was almost immediate where I said, yep, that's it. I'm doing this next year. And I'm going to train just as hard, you know, crush everything and just buckle down. Like, that's it. I'm doing it next year, no matter what. So it was almost immediate, to be honest.
That's awesome. So GORC selection 019 was in September of 2017. Did you have to make any modifications to your training schedule before you went to that? I mean, it seems like you had it pretty well dialed in, doing 12 to 14 workouts a week for 018, but was there anything that you found from 018 that made you tweak some of your stuff for 019?
There really wasn't too much. Like, it's funny because that's the one question like everybody asks, obviously, if they're like, hey, what did you change? What was the difference between the 2 years? And it was, there wasn't much from a strictly physical standpoint. There was very little. I knew that I couldn't jump the gun and go super heavy into training mode for selection, like as soon as I got home from 0-1-8, because I know I would have burned out. There's just no way that you can maintain selection level training for you know, a full 12 months, at least as, you know, without the high chance of getting injured or having a problem. You just, you know, you're going to burn out. So even on just a mental, like social level, it just, you know, it's just too much. So I just said, okay, like time to reset. I gave myself time to recover. I focused a little more on lifting over the winter, just tried to build up some strength, bulk up a little bit. And then, you know, that's when I got like a little impatient, but when I got to that point of 7-8 months out, it was like, okay, time to start cranking it up. And I just kind of slowly dialed it up as I got closer, you know, did the same thing. A little further out this time, it was about 3 months. I cut out all the alcohol, you know, two and a half months, I guess, cut out all the caffeine, coffee, stuff like that, which that's really sad because black coffee is the one thing to keep me happy during meal prep. But that was it. Just cranked it as I got closer and closer. You know, and just did the same thing. Really didn't modify too much as far as a physical standpoint. The only real focus was I knew it was going to be super hot, so I just made sure to get as much time in the sand as I could and in clothing, you know, uncomfortably hot as I could. But, you know, as far as the training program, it was very similar.
That's tough. Black coffee's my vice too. Love that.
Yeah, black coffee is like the one thing, like that, whether it's hot or cold, that's like when you're meal prepping and you're just eating chicken and broccoli constantly and the same stuff over and over, bland and whatever. Black coffee is like that one point of the day where it's like, all right, at least I have that. So yeah, doing that 2 years in a row for 2 or 3 months is definitely a bummer.
I bet. So during your interview with Gorek, you mentioned a couple things that you changed, and just now too, in your life to succeed this time around. You cut out alcohol 3 months before. You cut out black coffee 2.5 months before. It sounded like you were, you know, not staying out late. You're getting your sleep for your recovery. You kind of had to skip summer. How tough was that?
Yeah, I mean, last year for 0-1-8, it was the first time I was doing it. I mean, I had done similar things for, you know, whatever it might be. Like the first time I did the Killington Beast and Ultra Beast back-to-back for Spartan Race, or, you know, OCR World Championships, or for Death Race, or you know, for some of the longer events. Like I've done things like that before, but it's usually for a much shorter period of time leading up to the event. Selection last year was definitely the first time where I had, like, it was a few months where I just said, all right, no messing around. Let me just see what happens. Let me give this a try. And selection last year was in October, so I was able to at least start halfway through the summer, so it wasn't so bad. You know, all the Labor Day festivities, my birthday is in September, there's lots of fun stuff going on. You get into Halloween and stuff, and you know, it all sounds silly, but it's just when you combine like thing after thing after thing after thing where you're telling your friends like, oh, sorry, I can't do that either, or like, sorry, I got a train or whatever, it adds up. But it was okay the first year. It was just, it was that thing I was doing, and everyone was like, hey man, that's awesome, and you know, whatever. Doing it then this year again for the second summer in a row, and then with selection being a month earlier, 5 weeks earlier, whatever it was, so having to kickstart it basically at the beginning of summer and do the whole thing again, like a whole summer of, you know, no drinking, no going out late, no, you know, just skipping a ton of events, you know, or even racing, not doing obstacle course racing, which I love, doing all of those types of things to avoid getting injured. It was definitely, you know, harder this year just because it was like, oh man, I'm missing all this stuff again. But I knew it was the way to do it if I wanted to finish. So, you know, it was certainly good motivation to keep going during the event, because I said, I'm not doing this again next summer.
Yeah, you don't want to spend another summer missing OCR.
Yeah, missing OCR or just hanging out or, you know, oh, look at this fun show or, you know, whatever it might be, concert, yep, one night out or, you know, overnight ruck with friends doing like a fun ruck or something. And just, you know, yeah, that was it. I was like, that's it. This is the year, because I do not want to do this a third year in a row.
Right. So 12 to 13 workouts a week over the summer. What did you do for recovery?
I mean, my TENS EMS unit is definitely my best friend. I try to stick that on all the time. That, you know, I don't even know. Maybe it's more of a placebo than what it actually does physically, but I love that thing.
What is it?
Like a TENS unit with the sticky pads, with the electricity, got all different like pulse settings or...
Gotcha. You know, yep.
Yeah. The thing they'll put on you at like a chiropractor or physical therapy or whatever. Like I said, I don't know. Probably one of those things where it's partial science, partial placebo, but I love that. But I mean, most important thing to me for recovery was getting enough sleep. I feel like people try all these crazy, wacky things. And for me, just making sure that I was disciplined enough to go to bed so that I could get, you know, 8 or 9 hours every single night, that made a huge difference. The other thing, which I think is really overlooked by a lot of people, and I know it helps me massively, and again, I don't know how much of it is mental, but I do very little sitting throughout the day. I have a standing desk at work. I'm in New York City, so I stand on the subway, on the train, in and out every morning. I really try and sit as little as possible. I probably have it down to, you know, certain times eating and for meetings and stuff. You know, probably compared to the average person who might sit for 11 hours a day or some huge number, I sit for maybe 2 or 3 hours a day, you know, all total adding everything up. So I noticed when I started doing that purely for a health perspective, that it actually, I don't know if it's just because your circulation's up and your body's, you know, actively doing stuff more, but I certainly felt like that helped with muscle recovery. So yeah, certainly wouldn't claim that that's a science thing, but I feel a lot better doing that. And it certainly seemed like something that helped.
It's interesting, right? I've had a standing desk at my office for 6 years now, and that was awesome. And I just got one for the house, I think 2 years ago, and you can really feel the difference.
Yeah, it made a huge difference. Like I said, who knows what the science behind that is, if it's just strictly a moving around thing, but I just felt looser and, you know, heavy lifting session after heavy lifting session after sprint running work and all that kind of stuff. And like, it doesn't matter. I get up the next day, I do my morning lifting workout, and I'm all standing on the train, and it just feels right, you know? So yeah, I feel like that made a big difference for me.
Awesome. So you've trained all summer. We're getting into September. GORC selection's coming up. How are you feeling, you know, the week or two before this time around?
I felt good. Obviously, I think everybody, for any event that's significant in any way, you always sit there in the back of your head and you're, you know, despite all the workouts, all the dedication, all the time, you're like, did I do enough? Did I, you know, you eyeball, you know, as much as you try and stay off social media and ignore all the junk that's going on there, you look at some, you know, you eyeball what other people are doing. You're like, are they training harder than me? You know, do I have this all wrong? Am I doing the wrong stuff? You know, you like to a hilarious level question everything that you're doing and, you know, how you're doing it. But that's all just noise in your head. You know, ultimately I knew I put in the work. I knew I had experienced it and knew what it took to finish. And I, you know, I felt good. So I was just focused on keeping my nutrition on point, making sure all my gear was where it needed to be, and, you know, not getting injured or doing something stupid close to the event.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's funny how your mind plays tricks on you like that, and you just start second or third guessing everything.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how, you know, it seems fairly common. You know, like I said, I can, on a logical level, I'm like, oh, I've the confidence is all there. I know it's all the right stuff. I know it worked for me last time, but it is just funny how, yeah, you start thinking, you're like, yeah, do I have this all wrong? Am I, you know what I mean? Did I just totally miss the boat here? But yeah, ultimately, you know, that's just your head, and you got to just brush that stuff aside and compartmentalize and say, okay, it's time to get down to business here.
Yeah. That's how you felt, you know, leading up to the event. I'm sure a lot of people felt that way too. So you get to the event, and for this GORUCK selection, you know, 019, there was a ton of live coverage. GORUCK really used that Facebook live feed to the max. And it was kind of funny watching from our end, Jason's phone like heating up and shutting off because they were putting out so much live video. So you probably didn't realize that because you were in the thick of it, but
yeah, I had no idea. I mean, how extensive the coverage was. You couldn't hear any of the commentary, and you know, you could see obviously when I went back and watched the guys whispering and stuff, but I couldn't hear any of the commentary. And even honestly, you're so focused on what you're doing and whatever. I could see some cameras around. I figured they were just maybe taking some picture of this or that, or some footage to put together later or something. But I had no idea that they were doing the type of coverage that they were doing. You know, I figured it might have just been like one or two of the years past where they gave decent updates here and then every few hours. But yeah, no idea that, you know, it was all live like that, and there were just thousands of people watching at all times.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. So my guess is that the majority of the listeners watched at least some part of the live feed. And so I'm going to put links in because I believe they're still up on the GORUCK site for those who missed it. But what were some of the most memorable moments from that GORUCK selection event?
I mean, probably to start, I know the live coverage wasn't there yet, but I touched on this obviously when Jason and I were talking afterward. I failed the push-ups the first time. It was so hot and my nerves were just at like a 15, and I was so mentally locked in and just started banging out these push-ups that I literally didn't even hear Ragnar being like, hey, you're like not counting reps, essentially, like you're not locking out at the top, because I was doing them just too fast. You know, you get nervous, you start just basically during training. It was like I would drop to the floor all the time throughout the year. And if I couldn't immediately bang out, you know, 80, 90, 100 push-ups in 2 minutes without stopping, I was like, uh-oh, you know, I got to keep training harder. So to do the push-up test and then just mishear him and then have to start over, which takes away from your 2 minutes and everything, and just totally tank it, you know, I went and sat back down in line and I was like, oh man, I just, you know, instantly everything we just talked about, like all that training for 2 years and prepping and everything, and I said, there is no way that I'm leaving here 10 minutes from now and going back and facing everyone and being like, oh, I just really screwed that up. So, I mean, obviously you get a retest. I retested, everything was fine. I did plenty more than I needed to, but that was definitely like an, oh shit, I can't believe I just did that or almost did that. So that was before the live coverage. Once we got started, you know, the PT test, the rest of it was standard. And the welcome party is always crazy. That's such a blur. It's hard to remember much from that. I guess besides that, when I was digging that hole with the shovel, thinking back on it, when Mickey was like, hey, you're stopping too much, and he duct taped my hands to the shovel, that's hilarious in retrospect. In the moment, it was just like, awkward, but I mean that's hilarious to think now. You know, it's really funny for me to go back and watch some of the footage and just laugh at either the things they're saying or doing, because you know it's absurd. Of course, the whole situation out of context is absurd, but duct taping my hands to the shovel was definitely, you know, I'll probably never stop laughing about that because it's, you know, hilariously ridiculous, you know. And then obviously, I'm such a water person, as everyone found out during the event and stuff. The water evolutions with BD, it was super cool. Just like for me, the water is the place of comfort where I feel, most secure, comfortable, confident in my skills, whatever. Just being in a dead silent swamp in the middle of the night, seeing the stars, being completely physically beat down and exhausted, but just like swimming through the swamp was cool. You know, I definitely will remember that well.
Yeah, I bet. There aren't many people who get to do that.
Yeah, I mean, BD said that afterwards. Like, they've never done a water-based evolution like that or to that extent in selection. So that was cool. I guess the plan was to kind of see how the candidate, which was me in this case, how the candidate handled the water. And then when he could see how comfortable I was in the water, they just decided to just crank it a little bit, crank it. So they ended up with that. So I guess that probably they wouldn't have went to that extent if it was a guy who was, you know, strong and doing really well, but not necessarily a water person. So yeah, that was, you know, definitely cool to do.
Yeah. So after the event, you were surprisingly coherent. I remember watching your interview and I don't know why, but I was very surprised at how well you were articulating sentences. I mean, you could have told me that you just woke up and I would have believed it, that you looked that good afterwards. How are you feeling?
Yeah, it's funny. A lot of people said that. They're like, oh, your interview was so coherent. I mean, as far as what I looked like, I have to give credit for my girlfriend, Anna, to that. She, you know, Mikey B, the medic, went out and bought a bunch of like antibacterial, like scrub soap and all the stuff I needed, the sling and all that. And he basically pushed me into the outside shower. And I mean, I couldn't physically move. Everything was a bloody mess because of the silt and the rocks and sand that was that type of, you know, the sand that you get in brackish water, very high grit, abrasive, whatever. So, you know, that's in a swamp as compared to a beach. So I was just a disgusting bloody mess and I couldn't move. Obviously I had the issues with my shoulder. So, you know, Anna was the one who like shoved me under the shower, got everything off of me, scrubbed me down and, you know, put my hair back and at least like physically got me so I didn't look, you know, like a swamp monster. So that's all her. And then as far as the coherent part, I don't know. I guess it's the same as like when you're so tired that you're awake. I don't know. I think I remember being like, okay, this is a video interview. Don't you just finish this thing trying to sound like an idiot. So I don't know. I might've just wired myself because after the shower, it was like, hey, I sort of feel like a human being again. At that point, the pain hasn't really set in. You know, you're sore, obviously, but you're still like kind of riding that high. So yeah, I guess that's probably why I seemed awake.
So let's talk about your hair for a second.
Yeah.
For those who, well, I guess even if you did watch the live coverage, you wouldn't know this, but you have long hair. You have really long hair.
Yeah. It's down, you know, down.
Does it hit your waist?
Like stomach. No, it's stomach? Not, it's not quite waist level. Unfortunately, I'm getting older, so it doesn't grow quite as fast as it used to, but it's, you know, like the middle of my stomach.
Okay. That's still pretty long. And you had it pulled back the entire time. How terrified were you that was going to come off?
The level of prep I put into that is hard to explain. And that's one of those things like all the girls, the female GRTs that are listening will understand. But there's very few dudes listening that will really be able to grasp it because, you know, when your hair is that long and you're throwing a ruck on, like I give credit to any girl that leaves their hair even partially down during an event, because to me, you know, my hair has been long. I had crazy like punk metal looking hairstyles all in high school. But then, I mean, I started growing it out when I was like 18 and it's just got longer and longer since then. But so I'm used to having long hair, but when it's down and it's wet, and then you're trying to like put a ruck on or something like that, and it's all in the straps because there's literally like an extra foot or 2 feet of it that's like curled around the straps and stuff. Like it's awful. It's an awful feeling when it's wet and it's tugging and pulling. So I knew, I was like, I need to do something that's going to keep it back and out of the way, because if it comes down or, you know, I heard about this at another, I think it was 015, where there was like a group of people all with long hair, a couple females, and they were just playing with it in the ocean. And it was like, oh, you guys are going to lose hair tie privileges. I'm like, if I got to deal with something like that, it's hard to describe how much more annoying that's going to make everything. So I said, whatever I get to do, I just got to get it back and up and out of the way. I don't want to think about it the whole event. So yeah, I definitely practice. And like, again, it's only if you have long hair, you're going to understand, but I practiced like the type of bun I was going to use, how many hair ties and how I was going to put them up. And it's like, you got to get it up and out of the way, but also in case it loosens up and it starts to come apart, you got to be able to take it apart pretty easily, like during a you know, 2 minute rest and get it back up. So fortunately stayed up the way I had it, but yeah, I did put a comical amount of time into making sure that it was going to be out of my way for the whole event.
It's only comical now because it didn't come out, but if it had come out, I bet you would have wished you had put more time into it. So sounds like it all paid off.
Absolutely. Yeah, for anyone wondering, if they're trying to keep it back during an event without using like a hair product that's going to just immediately come out in the water, I loaded it up with keratin spray, which is like the protein that's in hair. It gets very sticky. Keratin spray, and then I just doused it in coconut oil and then pulled it back. So yeah, if any of the female GRTs are trying to figure out the best way to do it, that's what I did.
There you have it. So GORUCK Selection 19, from my couch in my living room as I watched on the TV, there were some parts that seemed, I don't know if dangerous, but like at least scary. How did you feel during the event? Were there any times where you felt like you were in danger?
No, I don't think so, because as brutal as it might seem that the cadre are being, and they are, I mean, it's meant to weed people out, right? That's the whole point, is like, you are not prepared for this. Please quit and go home. You can tell that they're watching like a hawk. You know, Mikey B, who's been the medic for the last 2 years, you know, he's watching like a hawk. They are constantly reminding you like, hey, drink water or you're going to drop and have a serious medical issue. So keep drinking water. But yeah, you can tell, as harsh as they're being and as stern and as up to the standard as they're being, like, you know, those guys have your back. I stress this to people all the time with endurance events, not just GORUCK, but it is extremely important, if you're going to go do an event like this and put yourself out there 110%, that you have confidence in the people running the event. Right. So I'm not going to sign up for an event where I'm going to push myself past my limits and know that I could very easily pass out or drown or fall and hit my head or, you know, get lost out in the woods because I'm hallucinating because I'm so sleep deprived. I'm not going to do that and put myself in that position unless I know that there's competent staff running the event, you know, that essentially have my back, that even if they're the ones putting me through the ringer, when it comes down to it, they know that, hey, these guys are out here giving it their all and they're paying attention. So, you know, there's a lot of copycat type of events that are out there. And I would just encourage people to do your research. Make sure that you're signing up for an event that's ran by people who are either, like in this case, where, I mean, they're all SF guys and they know exactly how to run a professional event, or it's put on by, you know, veteran endurance athletes who have a long list of accomplishments themselves and understand medical issues that come up and have a team on standby to watch out for you. You know, that way you can go into the event and not even think about your own safety, basically, which maybe isn't the best way to think, but that's how I think. You know, if I go, yeah, this is a good event put on by good people, I can just go in and put my all into the event and know that, you know, the staff has my back if something should happen to me while I'm out there. So I think it's the same thing with this. Like for me, you know, I knew those guys were there, and ultimately if a serious medical emergency went down, you know, they're going to be able to take care of me. So I really had no concerns about anything that was going on during the event.
That's great. And that's almost how you have to look at it if you want to give something your all. Otherwise, you're giving it, you know, 80% and you're spending the other 20% worrying about safety or other concerns like that. So that's great advice.
That's exactly it. Yeah. I mean, there's certain events where you're way out there, so you have to be a little mindful of your safety. Like, you know, I did Fuego y Agua survival run in Nicaragua, and you're like literally out on that volcano yourself, you know, so it's like that kind of event. It's more of an adventure race. Yeah. You have to be responsible a little bit for your own safety. But if it's an event where you're constantly under the watchful eye of cadre or staff or whatever it might be, then yeah, you should feel confident in the event you're participating in and the people running it, and just be able to throw everything you got into the event.
So before we talk about post-event and the recovery process, is there anything else you wanted to talk about GORUCK Selection 019?
No, I don't think so. I've probably been rambling on for long enough. Certainly, if you have any other specific questions, I'd be happy to answer them. But no, I don't think, you know, I have anything particular to say. It was awesome in all of its terribleness. It was an awesome thing to experience and train for and you know, take on. So it was great.
Yeah, I don't think we need to spend, you know, 2 hours describing the event, because there's just so much live coverage footage out there that, you know, people can see it for themselves. Everything that you endured.
I've been telling people, especially like if they don't want to go hunting, you know, or just there's so many people like outside of the endurance community, people at work and all over who, you know, they ask questions, you know, GORUCK's got it on their site that like GORUCK Selection 019, the definitive edition. I went back to be able to look at it myself. And I mean, that's got like, you can get the gist of it if you've never seen it or you didn't watch any of the stuff live. There's enough stuff linked there that's, you know, good one.
So how do you feel looking at that? Looking at the definitive edition, you know, seeing all the, there's hundreds of pictures that they've got on their site. They've got videos. Do you look at it and do you, you know, remember everything happening, or is it kind of, you know, you're looking at, when you look at pictures and you don't quite remember it, you know, even occurring?
I don't think there's any picture I looked at where I said like, oh, I don't remember that. Although it is funny if I was sitting here and somebody was like, okay, sit here and tell me exactly evolution by evolution and what happened and what you did and who is still there, I'd probably have a ton of empty spots because it's just, you know, your brain is already in such overdrive just trying to force yourself to keep doing what you're doing. But when I look through it in a timeline fashion with pictures, it's very easy because for me, every picture, you're like, it's almost like you go back in your brain to like that moment of pain. You're like, oh yeah, I recall that. So looking at it, it definitely keeps it all fresh. But I probably, if I was forced to, couldn't sit here and narrate it step by step or evolution by evolution as well as it does in a timeline like that.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, you know, like we said, the only way to give it 100% is to, you know, put it all in there, so you can't spend time trying to remember everything that's going on. You gotta put out.
Yep.
So post-event recovery, you mentioned, you know, briefly that during your interview, that was before the pain had set in. What's the pain and how was that?
So it was, I mean, I expected it to be rough, but I have to say, compared to either last year where I had done half that amount of time at Selection or any other event that's 40, 50, 60, 70 hours long, this just, how I felt after this just crushed all of those other events. You know, it's hard to overstate. It certainly ended up being nothing major. You know, certainly people go through worse every day and horrible accidents and stuff. But as far as just, hey, I signed up for this event and I did and I finished it, you know, my body was destroyed. As far as cuts and scrapes from that silty sand, rocky, hard packed dirt road, stuff like that, you know, on a level, as far as my skin, I was missing all the skin around the back and side of my neck, under my armpits, like where my pecs meet my arms, and the strap was just all gone there. You know, my arms are obviously heavily tattooed, but not that it would get down to a level where it messed with the tattoos, because that would be like, you know, cutting off your skin with a knife. So it was not that deep. The ink's is way lower, but you know, I still have like giant pink patches where all the skin on the top layers is all just still growing back. You know, my legs, like the bruises were hysterical, like huge, like I've never had before. Obviously, Mikey put me in a sling because we didn't know what was going on with my shoulder, which I did end up going and getting x-rays and getting examined. And, you know, they came short of making me do an MRI because they felt that it was fine after all the tests. It was just, you know, dead basically. But yeah, my ankles, like all the way from the knee down to my feet, basically swelled up to such an extent that like I wear Converse all the time. And my Converse were, the laces were stretched out all the way to the ends of the laces, to the fact that I couldn't even tie them. My legs, like my ankles, were actually wider than the shoes themselves. It was like hilariously blown up. It made it extremely painful to walk because of how my shoulders were. I couldn't change my own shirts. I couldn't tie my hair back. Like I said, just even with the post-event shower, Anna had to do everything for me. You know, we were on a trip, obviously. She packed up all our stuff for both of us. She would like help me shower, get me dressed, you know, help me sit up in bed if I had to, which was like once an hour. You know, she drove us. She literally had to do everything for the both of us because I was useless for, you know, a couple of days afterwards. And then still in strong pain for, you know, a week and a half after. So yeah, I was trashed. I had never been beat down like that before. Like Ohio last year, doing half the event, I was able to drive myself home, and I drive a car that's stick. So I drove a 5-speed all the way home from Ohio to New York, you know, stiff and sore and cuts and bruises and stuff, but it was nothing like it was this year. I was definitely destroyed.
Wow. That paints quite the picture.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to make it sound too dramatic. Like I said, people go through far worse things every day, but just, yeah, considering it was, hey, this event that I signed up for and just did and paid money for, like,
right, yeah, right.
I've never been beat down like that. You know, I'm just finally, Mikey was awesome. Mikey checked in with me, you know, twice a day, every day after the event to make sure, hey, I would try taking this, do this instead, change this method. You know, he checked in, you know, like a doc would and made recommendations and stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's fine. It's only in the last couple of days where I can really walk around comfortably and, you know, wear my ruck to work. I didn't put the weight plate back in yet, but you know, even my gear from work and stuff, you know, weighs something, and just to be able to walk and not have like splitting headaches and stuff. So yeah, I'm just in the last day or two, it's finally like, okay, I'm starting to really feel normal again.
And it's been a while since the event. Recording this. We're almost halfway through October.
Yeah, I think it'll be 3 weeks on Saturday. So yeah, I would put it easily at a 2-week recovery time.
So I think I know the answer to this question, but it's still fun to ask. Was it all worth it?
Oh yeah, it was totally worth it. It was awesome. And it's awesome to, you know, I love just that, just pushing yourself as hard as you absolutely can, you know, and really testing what you're made out of, because it's really easy, especially with how big the endurance community has grown, whether it's OCR or endurance or GoRuck or whatever. It's really easy to do stuff that's kind of hard and then stand back and look at like your wall of patches or your rack full of race medals or whatever, you know, and be like, oh wow, look at all the stuff I did. And you go on social media and people pat you on the back and stuff. And it's really easy to not truly test yourself and just be like, yeah, I'm doing awesome stuff. But to take the leap of being like, okay, this is that next level thing, and I really have to put myself out there and give it all I've got, that to me is very rewarding. You know, I don't want to end up in that point, you know, where you settle and you get comfortable and you're like, all right, well, this is my level. You know, it, it it's important to just to always push.
Yeah, you see that a lot.
Yeah, and then that doesn't also mean, you know, oh, I just started doing these events, so like, yeah, I got to push myself and I'll sign up for selection, even though you're not at all ready. You know, that to me doesn't make any sense either, to just sign up for stuff that's the hardest thing out there and then just fail miserably and just get used to failure. You know, that's no good either. You want to work up to it so that, you know, everybody has a DNF now and then, right? Everybody failed something. You have to fail something every once in a while because then you know that you're pushing yourself hard enough. But I never want to get to the other point where it's just like you're failing everything and, you know, you're signing up for just everything that you're not ready for and trying to like speed through the test so that, you know, you sign up for all hard stuff and 100-mile races or, you know, major events like selection and people pat you on the back. Like, oh yeah, you signed up. Good for you. You know, but then you fail all of them and you just get used to failure. That's no good either. So, you know, earn your way up the ladder, but, you know, always reach for the next rung, I guess would be the way to put it.
I like that. I like that. And I think, I mean, both the OCR community and GoRec have enough rungs now where you can make that possible.
Yeah. You know, there's a good path to just, if you want to conquer the hardest stuff that's out there that all these various disciplines offer, you know, there's a path there. There's tons of material of how to train and how to prepare and, you know, put in the work, like, you know, start small and train hard and just get better and better. And you know, especially something like GoRec where their team events, like don't train for a heavy to just make it through it. You know, you can pick an event where it's a really big event and gray man your way through and be like, oh yeah, I did it. But you know, that's not rewarding. Rewarding is knowing that you trained the hardest you could train for that event to be the strongest team member that you could be to, you know, be a crutch for somebody else. If maybe they get injured or they're having a hard low moment or something like that, like train the hardest you can for that event so that you crush it, you know, and you can be as strong as you can be for it. And then when you really have mastered that event, then move on to the next thing, you know, and challenge yourself that way. Don't scrape by.
Absolutely. So speaking of training advice, I think you've got an interesting perspective on this because you can give both types of advice. What advice do you have for people who have attempted selection and didn't complete it and are considering, you know, giving it another shot?
So, you know, that's a hard one because I think it depends on each particular person. Some people just don't have any time under the ruck. They might be really strong and fit and well equipped to kind of handle all the different technique stuff, but they're just not used to rucking. And they, you know what I mean? They just, even whatever you want to call it, even if you want to use the word boring, like they're just, you know, miles and miles, they're just not used to being underweight. And so even if they can exercise really good or train really hard, they just don't have the time under the ruck. You know, other people have done a ton of rucking and they've done hundreds and hundreds of miles with lots of weight and they could just walk for days on end with weight on their back. But, you know, they haven't maybe lifted or they don't understand the way to properly do not body weight movements, but movements that are almost like a replication of lifting, you know, like those sandbag workouts. If you don't know how to clean a bar and suddenly, you know, 15 hours into one of the hardest events out there, they're like, okay, take this, you know, 80-pound sandbag that's now wet and closer to 100 bag and press clean it for the next 2 hours or 3 hours, and you don't even understand the mechanics of a clean, that's going to be rough on you, you know? So it depends. I guess probably the biggest thing is whatever you're not good at or whatever killed you at selection, don't necessarily just focus on that thing, that one type of exercise, but really, really look at it and just go, okay, what was the what was the overall fitness discipline that I failed at, and train that, you know, way harder than the other stuff that, you know, you can do well.
I think that's really good advice. I mean, I haven't attempted selection, but personally in my training, even if I'm doing a half an hour or an hour long sandbag workout, like I find myself drifting towards exercises that I like. Like I absolutely hate like sandbag overhead squats. Like,
right. Yeah, I mean, who I don't know what maniac would like those, but I guess there's somebody out there. But.
Yeah, like that's my nemesis. And so like I can do an hour long workout and not put any of them in there just because I hate them that much. And so, I mean, I think that's great advice that to pass selection, you can't do that.
You have to train what you're bad at.
Yep.
You know, that's the same thing with, you could look at a million different disciplines or professions or sports or whatever. You know, if a guy's a good runner, of course he's going to do a lot of running workouts because it's satisfying. It feels good. It makes him happy. You know, people, if a guy is just a meathead purely and hates running, he's going to do all lifting stuff. Like, people gravitate towards what they're good at. So I think that's an important thing. If you want to be the all around well-rounded person for something like selection, you have to focus on what you're not good at.
Absolutely. And so bridging from that, is there any additional advice that you'd have for someone who's never attempted selection, but is considering, you know, signing up after seeing the live feed and watching your completion?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's probably a, I don't know if it's a cheap answer, but it's probably the same thing. It's probably like really understand what your weak points are, you know, because I heard Stoney say this before, and he's absolutely right. Live feeds have a hilarious tendency to make people feel that like, oh, I could definitely do that, because when it's a blacked out event and you don't see much of what's going on, you just see this dude who's like bloodied and destroyed at the end. You're like, oh, that's gnarly. But it's terrifying. Who knows what they had that guy do, you know? And it's scary because it's so unknown. But when they broadcast the whole thing and you can sit there, and I mean, we never used to be able to do that, when you can literally sit there and watch 3/4 of the event live video, it gives you this false sense of security of like, oh, I've done all that stuff before. I've done sandbag workouts and I've ran and I've rucked and like, I can totally do all that stuff. I'm going to sign up and I'll just train a little more than I usually do, and this will be great. You know, and then, I mean, I don't want to be negative, but there's just people who, I'll just do a little more than usual. And you're like, man, those people are going to get soul crushed if they even make it out of the PT test, you know? So it's the same thing. It's like, you gotta put down the video for a second, put down the social media, read some of the AARs, the older ones, you know, the real meat and potatoes of what some of these past finishers have said, and really understand that these are the guys that finished, and they're all saying, hey, you gotta commit to this like you've never committed to anything. And just this, you know, almost every finisher has said like this becomes your life for at least 6 months before. So if you don't want it that bad and you're not training that hard, like, you're just not gonna make it. Like, the statistics just show, like, you don't stand a chance. So, you know, you have to think about every aspect and eliminate as many variables as you can. You know, I mean, right off the bat, one of the things I always hear people talking about is their feet, right? They're like, oh, what, they want like the magical sock and cream combination that's going to save them from any blisters. And it's like, you know, to me, like, I watch people going out on practice rucks and they're putting on, you know, I'm not going to use any brand names, but they're putting on all these creams and they're putting on liner socks and thick socks and boots and like all this stuff. Most of my practice rucks of any sort, whether it's to or from work or just out and about or whatever, I can tell you I did a really old Converse with holes in the bottom, wearing socks with holes in them, and I stepped in all the puddles I could find. And I did that day after day after day, literally for years, rucking in Converse with holes in them while they're wet. And that is what protects my feet. I mean, when I do an event, I have a certain way that I prep my feet, but they're already so toughened up from just rucking in Converse that, you know, I would never think about, oh, I'm going for a half hour practice ruck, so let me like go through a half hour procedure to prep my feet. That's just crazy. You know, you have to train not just your body, but stuff like that. Like think about those kinds of things and train that constantly every day if you wanted to perform the way you needed to perform, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I think that hits a few different parts. I mean, for one, at Gorek Selection or some of the, you know, more difficult Gorek events, you don't always have the time to apply all that stuff to your feet. So
I can tell you, like, I have very good luck at events because I train my feet in wet Converse all the time. I don't have many problems at all. Like when I put on boots and like the Vaseline and socks and the whole setup that I do, you know, I'm like, wow, I'm walking on clouds, right? And I can do a heavy and not even have to change my socks once. It's just like, yep, my feet are totally fine at the end of the heavy. So, yeah, I mean, the first night it was good. The second day it was going well. I can tell you because I was so like amped up and ready to go for the long walk, I didn't do any foot prep in between like those 7 hours of swimming with BD and then the whatever evolutions were after that. And then the long walk, I literally went into the long walk with like destroyed feet as I started it, which was stupid. And that was definitely a lapse of mental judgment at that point. Cody pointed that out. Like I gave you time for that and you didn't take it, right? My fault. But anyway, yeah, I mean, so there's going to be stuff you have to grunt out, right? I had to grunt that out. My feet were pretty trashed after that, but overall, I got through that because they were prepped for that. You know, they were doing great up until that point. So it wasn't that big of a deal.
Yeah. And I mean, there's nothing saying that you're going to show up and you get to use your own shoes. For all you know, you're going to show up to Selection and they're going to have 200 pairs of whatever, you know, Sauconys there in different sizes. And you have to put those on and do the whole event in those shoes.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Selection, what I liked about it, the difference from some of the other events is it didn't have that like wacky, zany, let's see how crazy we can make this. It's just, it's a standard. Like everyone gets the same stuff essentially with the list, you know, and you're going purely based off your training and your performance. But yes, you're absolutely right. Like people, they worry way too much about the little tiny details, you know, where a year out and they're just like, well, what brand of like middle sock did you have and stuff? And it's like, hey man, just like, why don't you be able to do 100 pushups, you know, at a moment's notice, no matter when first, worry about that stuff first. And then, you know, start to dial in your gear as you ramp your training up, you know, but get the commitment down physically first.
Yeah. I mean, that makes perfect sense. My rucking shoes right now are a pair of Brooks running shoes that have over 1,000 miles on them. I think they've got like 1,200 on them. I mean, they're just, you know, just beat old running shoes. I did back-to-back Tufts in them. It's, you know, they are what they are, and you can't really purchase your way to completing some of these events.
Yeah, definitely not. I do a lot of barefoot running, right? Like I don't like that huge heel toe rise, even in my running shoes and stuff. So yeah, my running shoes, I didn't even want to change them from last year because it was like a funny sentimental thing. So they're like the New Balance, these trail shoes that have a zero drop. Like they're practically like putting on like belly slippers. There's nothing to them and they have holes in them and I run in them without socks. So they're like nothing. And then, yeah, when I'm like, oh, I can't wear these because I got to ruck and be able to support some weight, I put on my Converse, which are full of holes, you know? So, yeah, you know, do it Rocky style. Just worry about the physical stuff and not the fancy equipment, you know? Dial in your gear and get used to it and train with it, but worry about yourself and your physical fitness first.
Absolutely. So we're only, I mean, what, 3 weeks from this event. Have you started looking, you know, towards the future? What's the next event for you?
I haven't picked out anything specifically of like, oh, this or that. There's a few events that kind of live in that same realm of some of like the bigger tier events. I haven't really figured out a schedule yet. I know I definitely missed obstacle course racing this year. Like last year, I got to do races in the first half of the year. You know, I knocked out Spartan's Delta, and I did like an Ultra Beast up in Montreal, and you know, some miscellaneous other OCRs and, you know, trail running and ultra marathons and stuff. But this year I did very little because I didn't want to get injured. I knew it was like my year. So as anxious as I am to get back to that though and have another season where I just run elite and try and, you know, do as best I can leading up to OCR World Championships, I don't think that's going to be next year because I haven't had a fall or like a late summer fall to myself now in 4 or 5 years because of just all various events. So I might do a couple, you know, a couple fun, maybe run elite to see how I'm doing obstacle wise and stuff. And, you know, but still fun OCR and maybe one or two bigger events and just have a good time with it. But I don't think next year is going to be a very serious season. I'm not going to be going for points or anything like that. But yeah, I haven't picked out anything specific. I think for the winter, it's just going to be get back into lifting, get some of my strength back after this long recovery, and you know, see where I'm at in the spring, see what I want to do, train for.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't run many OCRs, but I do like listening to OCR podcasts, and so there's quite the selection out there now.
I like stuff that's on mountains and through the woods and, you know, especially whether it's an early heat and there's not many people out or a later heat when there's not many people out, like there's nothing like just flying through the woods recklessly on a cold morning or a, you know, whatever it might be, a rainy day or something. So yeah, I like just being out in nature. That's part of why I like OCR so much.
That's great. So it takes a lot of time, energy and commitment to train for an event like this. Obviously you've given Anna a couple shout outs so far, but is there anyone that, you know, or a group of some people that you want to give a shout out to or thanks to?
Yeah. I mean, you know, my parents and my family gave me a ton of support. They're all about it. You know, I think my mom always does like the one-handed horror movie watch of like the seeds and stuff, you know, like, oh, I can't believe you keep doing this to me, but you know, I'm proud of you sort of thing. I'm sure that the live feeds were painful for her to watch, but my family's super supportive. Like I said, Anna's been amazing through the whole thing, you know, early morning workouts, canceled dates, canceled plans, just, I'm training. Yep. No, I can't train. Can't this or that. So she's been amazing. All my friends, super supportive, you know, people, especially like our group that does all kinds of camping around OCR and trips and hikes and adventures outside. I love those guys. And even though they're, you know, like we always do a big Labor Day camping trip, even though they're all partying and drinking, whatever, they all understand what I was doing the past 2 years, even before that for elite races and stuff. So they're all just super supportive of it. They're stoked, you know, and certainly everyone that follow along and shout out encouraging stuff while they were watching the live feed. That was super cool to see. And it's always fun with selection, you know, whether it's me or somebody else, it's always fun to watch like the whole community end up kind of rallying behind, you know, the last couple of people that are left and really pushing for someone to finish. So that's always great. And also my job, they're super cool. You know, we're a small company that's just growing at a huge rate and we have a ton of work. And they're all super supportive of, you know, how much training I do and the fact that I'll give 150% when I'm at work. But then when I leave it, training is super important and my meal prep and eating and schedules like that are important. So, yeah, my job's been super awesome about it as well. They all, you know, a bunch of them were all following along when the live feed was out there. So, yeah, just, you know, everybody, try and surround myself with people that are pushing themselves and doing good stuff and, you know, have a positive outlook. So I have to say everybody around me has been really positive about it. You know, really cool.
That's awesome. you know, a great thing to do is surround yourself with people who want you to be a better person and make you want to be a better person and more successful. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. You surround yourself with people that are doing better than you or working harder or accomplishing things. You know, it's amazing how much that pushes you to then want to work harder and accomplish more and do better things. Like, huge you surround yourself with. So yeah, I think that's really important. And that's definitely something that I've seen tenfold in the endurance community is just, you know, the more positivity that's out there and just people encouraging each other and killing goals and crushing life, that, you know, that just makes you want to work that much harder and be that much better.
Absolutely. Well, Alex, thank you so much, man, for just taking a ton of time out of your evening to chat with me. I know this is late for you, and man, I truly appreciate this. It's been a ton of fun for me. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Thank you for having me on. Yeah, certainly. it's way past my bedtime with how it's been recently. I've been conking out hours before. So yeah, it's funny that I'm same thing, I guess, still coherent. But yeah, I appreciate it very much. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, man. Take care. Thank you so much for listening to the All Day Ruck Off podcast. To learn more about Go Ruck Selection and to get links to everything we talked about during the show, please visit the show notes at alldayruckoff.com/podcast/episode-018. To learn more about All Day Ruck Off, you can visit us at alldayruckoff.com. Did you enjoy the show? We would love a review on Apple Podcasts or even our Facebook page. Think we can do something better? Send an email directly to me at brian@alldayruckoff.com, as I am always looking for ways to improve the show. Don't forget to check out charitychallenges.org for the Flutter Kick Challenge and to help us raise some more money for the Greenberry Foundation and Team RWB. If you want to support the podcast, we have some new gear available on alldayruckoff.com/store, so you can check that out. Thank you so much again, and remember, attitude is everything, keep yours positive, and drink hard, ruck harder.